If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Liz Tennedy, and you're listening to the Motherly Podcast. I am 8 months pregnant with our fourth baby, and even though I have given birth 3 times in my life, honestly, a few days ago, I found myself feeling really afraid and worried about having to give birth. You know, it's almost like one day you wake up and you realize, oh, this is really going to happen again. And I'd kind of been burying it and trying to ignore the fact that I was going to give birth again. And the time has come to kind of face my fears. And, you know, I'm afraid of the pain. It is painful. I'm afraid of how unpredictable birth can be. Each of my children's births have been different in you know, various ways, and you really never know what's going to happen. I'm afraid of just the newness of it. We're having the baby in a different hospital. I don't know what to expect. I've had some great experiences and some not so great experiences in my previous children's births. So all of those things are combining to kind of create this moment where I know that I need to face my fears and I have to summon the courage to deal with it. I really think that motherhood and parenthood in general is this ultimate act of courage and bravery and facing the unknown. And giving birth is this thing like you have to deal with it at a certain point. It's going to happen. And it in a way, I'm trying to look at it now as this invitation to kind of center myself, to face my fears, to prepare for that moment and remind myself that I am so capable of doing this. And even though women give birth around the world every day, every moment, every hour, it's still really, really scary. And it can feel so overwhelming, even doing it for the fourth time. I'm reminding myself now about how much it's worth it, not just because I'm going to get to meet our new baby at the end of that delivery process, but also because I know that when I'm on the other side of this experience, I'll be honestly proud of finding my strength and knowing that I could do that. Hey, Mama. Welcome to season 2 of the Motherly Podcast. We are back. And for any new listeners, welcome. You're listening to the Motherly Podcast, honest conversations about modern motherhood. I'm Liz Tennedy, co-founder of Motherly. And today, to kick off our new season, we're talking with Reshma Sajani, founder and CEO of Girls Who Code, a national nonprofit working to close the gender gap in tech. Reshma is the definition of a change maker. She's been named on Fortune's World's Greatest Leaders list and Forbes' Most Powerful Women Changing the World, among a slew of other incredibly esteemed lists. And she's nationally recognized as someone who's truly changing the tech landscape. But Reshma's career hasn't always been full of home runs. In 2010, she became the first Indian American woman to run for Congress. But she lost by a huge margin to the incumbent Democrat in her district. And while the loss was devastating, she learned a lot through that experience about how we socialize women and girls, which she writes about in her new book, Brave, not perfect. We chatted with Reshma about her own experience of being a mom to her son, Sean, how we can raise our girls to be risk takers, and how we as mothers can unlearn the deeply ingrained perfectionism within so many of us. Reshma, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So a question I always have for my guests is, tell me about your view of motherhood before you became a mom yourself.
Oh my God. I didn't think it'd be this hard. I did not think it was going to be this hard. And I think maybe I romanticized it. I think that I had married like a feminist, so I thought like we'd have this really kind of equitable, fair share and everything would be 50-50. And then when I had my son, all of my, I guess, you know, misnotions about what it was going to be like just went out the door. Mm-hmm. And it just, I realized how messy it is. And I've embraced the messiness.
Why do you think you didn't know it was going to be this hard?
Oh, my God. I feel like we romanticize it in culture. I feel like we don't talk about it, right? I mean, even if you think about, you go on Instagram and you have these women who have these beautiful pictures of them and their kids and everything looks so perfect.
Right.
And right? So, like, mm-hmm. we don't talk about how exhausted you are, how draining it is, how you never have time for yourself, how maybe you don't want to sit with your kids and teach them how to trace letters, right? Maybe you just want to have a glass of wine and read the New York Times. And, like, nobody talks about it that way.
Yes.
So I felt like when I was feeling that way that something was wrong with me. Mm. And it wasn't until I started kind of sharing it on social or talking about it to my friends that people are like, oh my God, no, I feel the exact same way that mm-hmm. I felt like I was normal.
It's almost like this idea of perfectionism is carrying over into motherhood and that
totally.
We're only showing the perfect version. I mean, honestly, I had a moment with my kids this week where I'm like, well, that's not going on Instagram. Like, I handled that incredibly poorly, and I'm mad at everyone. And, like, of course I'm not putting that on social media. But when I don't, and I only put the fun moments or the funny moments, you know, we're not telling the full story.
And let's be honest, like, when I think I shared a picture of, like, Sean on my birthday, like, pulling my hair. Yeah, no likes. Like, nobody
right.
wants to see it. Mm-hmm. And so I've, like, been rebelling against that personally and just, you know, like, showing the real stuff. And if people don't like it, I don't care. But I'm not going to keep telling a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's kind of what we have to do. Yes, perfectionism is so tied into everything that we that's wrong with motherhood and
yeah.
that's complicated about motherhood.
Well, this podcast is all about having honest conversations. So let's start talking about it. In your TED Talk, you coin this line that I love, everyone loves, and it's really sort of defined your book and your activism, which is that we're raising our girls to be perfect and we're raising our boys to be brave. So what do you mean by that and why does it matter?
Look, I mean, I think if you go to any playground, you'll see what I mean. Like, we tell our boys to, like, crawl to the top of the monkey bars and just jump. And with our girls, we're like, you know, be careful, honey. Don't swing too high. You know, did you take that toy away from her? Like, give it back. So we're constantly teaching our girls to silence themselves, to put others' feelings before theirs, right? To look perfect, to be perfect, right? And it's causing them to feel like when they get older that they, you know, they give up before they even try, right? They start getting addicted to perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And as we become women, perfectionism is literally making us sick. Women are twice as likely to be depressed than men. And then from a leadership work perspective, we're feeling like we have to be perfect to lead. And so it's become toxic in our lives. And it's really socialized from the time that we are 30 months old.
It gets socialized when you're pregnant and people find out if you're having a boy or a girl and they start making comments or they'll even say, you know, you look a certain way. So, you know, they're already making all these gender assumptions just about you, the way you're carrying or mm-hmm. just finding out if it's a boy or a girl. It starts really early.
That's the first question people ask you. Is it a boy or a girl? And we, you know, it's funny. I also think that we pass this down generation after generation after generation. Like, I don't know about your mom, but my mom was like, you know, stand up straight. You know, did you gain 10 pounds? Like, oh, I don't know mm-hmm. if you're going to get that job, right? She was mm-hmm. always so critical. And so, and I watch sometimes how my sister is with my niece, and she's so critical. And so we're constantly almost like passing down our unrealized dreams or potential on our daughters. We're making it so much harder on them. But with our sons, we let them be flawed. You know, we let them to be mediocre. We let them be a mess. And we don't have the same expectations on them. And it's crippling for our girls.
So how did you come to this revelation in your own life? Tell me the story of identifying perfectionism within yourself and in the broader world.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think for me, like, my parents came here as refugees. I felt like this country, that they had gone through so much that I had to be a good little girl. And so I always got A's. I didn't talk at my turn out of school. Like, I, you know, obeyed and followed every single rule that was in the house. I, you know, when I got older, like, I always wanted to be, you know, in public service, but I worked in finance, right? I worked for the man, and I ended up in these jobs that I, like, hated, but I knew my parents were proud of me. And I finally got to this point in, like, my early 30s, and I think your early 30s is when you're like, I'm not young anymore, right? Like, I can't keep waiting until the the next year to do the thing that I want to do. Like, now is now. And I was in this job that I hated, and it's funny, like, my best friend calls me, and I'm at work. And it's like your best friend always calls, like, when your life is falling apart. And then I go into this windowless conference room, and I just cry. And she was like, just quit. And I did. And I ran for Congress in this race that, like, I had no chance of winning. But it was, like, the best 10 months of my life. And I lost miserably. I mean, like, not even close. Like, I'm broke. I'm humiliated. I know people are either laughing at me or feeling sorry for me. But the thing, when I woke up the next morning, I thought to myself, and it was a shock for me. I was like, oh, my God, I'm not broken. Like, I'm not broken. And I had thought for so much of my life that if I tried for something that I really wanted, because I really wanted this, and that it didn't work out, that it would physically break me. And so it was a huge eye-opener. And I was like, I can do other things. I can, you know, bravery's a moonshot. Like, I can try other things. They could not work out. I could be okay, but I could be happier. And it was that quest for joy, right? Wanting to really be in, you know, in the way you say when you're in your flow, like, which you probably are in your work right now, and I certainly am in my work, because I'm doing it, I'm doing what I want to do and not what I think I should do or what I'm good at. And that's very different.
And what I'm seeing more and more in sort of parenting conversations is that this idea of people are recognizing that encouraging our kids to try things and fail and then build up the resilience to try again, they're starting to really value that. Do you see that as well? And what do you think it means to tell our kids to fail?
Look, I say to people throughout, your parenting books are wrong. Like, in the name of building confidence, we have killed our children's confidence. You know, my parents never read my college essay. They didn't even know where I applied to school. And parents are hovering and helicoptering and what they call it now, snow plowing, in ways that are so toxic for their children. They don't let them fail. They don't let them, whether they don't let them fall on the playground and get a scraped knee, right? They don't let them face disappointment. If they're bad at soccer, they pull them out and put them into gymnastics just so they can feel like what it's like to be great at something. And all of that is creating zero resistance, zero tolerance, zero, they don't know what it's like to feel rejection, you know, or get critical feedback. I mean, you think about any great athletes. Athletes sit at their ability of feedback, you know what I mean, and rejection. So it's like they have a coach who's sitting there saying, do it again, do it again, do it again. That's how you excel, right? Not if someone's telling you, you're amazing, you're great, you didn't make a mistake. I mean, that's a false sense of security. And so when that's lifted from them in the real world, it's soul crushing.
So how do we start that process, not just for our girls, but for our children in general? Like, what does it mean? How do we start to let our kids have that experience of failure?
Well, first, I think we have to exercise some patience. I realize that, like, you know, as a working mom, even with my son, I'm like, he'll be like, let me put on my socks. I'm like, no, let me do it. Because I just don't have the patience, right?
Yes.
To sit there and let him keep trying over and get the wrong. I mean, it's just, it's frustrating, right?
Yes.
So I got to have the patience to let him fail. And a lot of us in this kind of go up world, like, we just don't have the patience. So we got to find patience. Secondly, it's really important, I think, for your kids to kind of get dirty and messy and to build things and use their hands. And so, like, you know, for our boys, we're often allowing them to tinker, and Legos is so important and block building is so important. Oftentimes we don't expose our girls to that. But, mm-hmm. you know, when you build something or you fix something, you start getting comfortable with a challenge. And so I don't know about you, but, like, I didn't have exposure to that when I was young. So when I got older, if my phone went black, I'd be like to my husband, hey, can you fix my phone? Or if I got a toy that felt a little complicated, I would get frustrated in a few minutes if I couldn't figure out how to do it. And now I sit with that frustration and I let myself learn how to be challenged. And so I feel like you got to do that with your kids at a very, very, very young age.
Mm-hmm. So in talking about the difference between how we socialize boys and girls, even from a very early age, this was something that you noticed and realized that this sort of culture of perfectionism and not experimentation was one that was really hurting girls and boys. So can you tell us the story of how you noticed this and how you came up with the idea for Girls Who Code?
Yeah, so for Girls Who Code, I'm not a coder, right? I was definitely one of those girls that was like, thought I was bad at math and science. I end up running for this congressional seat. I lose. And, you know, I said to myself, I don't want to go back to the private sector. And of all the things that I saw on the campaign trail, what's the thing that really moved me? And I remember going into these like CS classrooms or robotics labs, and I would just see a ton of boys and like no girls. And I knew that, like, you know, being the daughter of refugees, that it mattered what your skill set was, that if you wanted to get a chance to march your family up into the middle class, that you had to get a job that was going to pay well. And these tech jobs were paying well, and there was mm-hmm. a lot of them. And it felt like we were leaving women and girls behind. And so I spent 2 years kind of learning everything that there was about women in tech, why we weren't there, what was happening with girls in coding, and came up with an idea of doing a free summer camp, and just launched my first one in 2012. And it clicked. And now, you know, 7 years later, we've taught 185,000 girls. We've reached millions through our programs. We have 6,000 after school clubs, you know, 80 summer immersion programs, you know, hundreds of college loops. And so that's how Girls Who Code, you know, started. And, you know, this piece about bravery. So, you know, I think a lot of, if you ask most girls, you know, who's a coder, they often think it's like a male genius. Right. They mm-hmm. often think that they can't do it. Like they're just not, quote, smart enough. Mm-hmm. And when girls were first learning how to code, when girls would make a mistake, they wouldn't show their teacher their line of code. They'd rather say, well, I don't know how to do it. And it was so interesting. It's like this idea of perfection or bust, right? Like this, you're giving up before you even try. And that's what inspired me to do this TED Talk. And I do this TED Talk and I get thousands of people reach out to me and be like, I do this. My wife does this. My daughter does this. Mm-hmm. And so I spent, again, 2 years researching and saying, you know, is there this idea about that we teach our girls to be perfect and that if we taught them to be brave, we could create a different world? And after 2 years of research and writing this book, I was like, yes. Like, we do live in a sexist, racist world. And while we fight that, while we fight, you know, for equality, we have to give women and girls strategies to thrive in the existing world. Mm-hmm. And to me, so many of us hold ourselves back because of perfectionism. And so we don't get those promotions. We don't get those opportunities. We take ourselves out of the game because of perfection. And so how do we unlearn that? Mm-hmm. And I wrote this book and I have some strategies in it that I actually think that you can unlearn perfectionism. That doesn't mean you're one and done. That doesn't mean one day you just wake up and you're brave, not perfect. Like, it is a practice that you have to engage in on a daily basis. And it's exciting. And it brings you, you know, it makes you happier. It brings you joy.
And one of the ways that we can actually do that is by raising our daughters in a different way. So
yes.
Can you talk to me about what those strategies are that you've identified to help raise our girls to be brave?
Yeah. I mean, so I think the first thing is about getting them to get dirty and messy, stopping yourself when you see that your daughter spilled something on her and every bone in your body wants to just change her dress and clean her up and let her be messy. Like, let her not feel like every, you know, she has to walk through life without, like, you know, every bow on her head. And we do that, right? Like, mm-hmm. so many of us are afraid to, like, leave the house without a full face of makeup on to go to the grocery store. I mean, come on. So I think stopping that picking and prodding and fixing and straightening, stop doing that to your daughters and stop it as young as you possibly can. You know, the second thing is, you know, studies will show that when girls are building blocks, they'll build very low, stable structures that have like a story with it. Boys just build high and kick it down.
Sounds right.
So, yeah, you know, like teach your girls to kind of build high and kick it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take them to maker fairs, you know, teach them how to code, you know, expose them to books. And I love Ada Twist, the Scientist, and, you know, Rosie Revere, the Engineer, right? Expose them to stories about rebel girls, right? Expose them mm-hmm. to stories about fierce women that are just creating and innovating, you know, and that are not perfect. Like, oftentimes, even when you watch the shows that you're watching with your kids, everything has a happy ending. Life is not a happy ending. You can make mistakes. You will fail. You will get your heart crushed. Like, let that happen to them at an early age. I mean, it's kind of like falling in love. Imagine if you never fell in love before, how hard it would be to put yourself out and put your heart out there. If you protect your daughters from failure or the slightest bit of making a mistake, they'll never be able to take that big risk.
Let's do it. So as I told you, I have a daughter and I have two sons and I'm expecting a third. So I'm a boy mom too. So I'm often reading about, as you are, right? And
yeah.
I'm often reading about these gender issues and thinking about it from the perspective of raising a daughter and the unique challenges there. And the same with raising a son. There was a study out just last week that showed that American parents are actually increasingly comfortable with girls breaking outside of gender norms and still not comfortable with boys doing the same.
So true.
I'm wondering, as a boy mom, like, how do you talk to your son about gender and values, and how can we be the generation that also frees boys mm-hmm. from these stereotypes as well?
Yeah, I feel so strong. Like, you know, my husband and I got in a fight about a nightlight a couple years ago because Sean wanted a nightlight. So I went to Bye Bye Baby. I bought the nightlight. I plug it in. I go into my room. Sure enough, my husband comes up, you know, 5 minutes later, takes out the nightlight. Sean screams. We do this dance for like a week. And finally, I'm like, what is your problem? He's afraid of the dark. And he looks at me and he, you know, doesn't skip a beat. You know, he, you know, I got to toughen him up. And to my feminist husband, I said to him, look, if Sean were a girl, would you let him have the nightlight? And to his credit, he was like, oh my God, you're right. I would.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we spend so much time telling our boys to be tough, to be strong, and to not be vulnerable. And we got to stop that too. Like, my son is a cautious, he's not jumping off any monkey bars. He is cautious. He is kind. He is like a little Gandhi. And I have to protect him from the rest of the world trying to kill that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not seen as being like a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that what's so awesome about this time that we're in is we have these men who want to be our allies, who want to be supportive of women, who want to elevate women, who want to, you know, like our feminists. But we need to make sure that we raise them to allow them to be too.
Let's do it. You talk in your book about the fact that this pressure of perfectionism can sometimes hit working moms the hardest.
Mm.
How have you struggled with that yourself in your own career?
Oh my God, all the time. You know, when I first had my son, I just could not lose the baby weight, right? I was not one of those women who were like breastfeeding, just like took off the pounds. If anything, it like made me keep them. And I remember, like, you know, I'm CEO of an organization. And so the best time for me to get to the gym was like at 7:30 in the morning. And that was the time my son was waking up. That was the time the dog wanted to. It was the best time for me, but the worst time for my family.
Mm-hmm.
And so the most courageous thing I feel like I've done in the past couple of years is just walk out the door and be like, y'all figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's so important, especially when you are a mom, to stop being a martyr and putting everybody's feelings before yours to the point where you're actually physically sick. And so that's a huge lesson that I've had to learn. I also spend most of my time, I feel like, just glaring at my husband because I'm like, you know, he doesn't feel the same way I feel. And I'm like, why do I feel this way? Why do I take two red eyes in a row? You know, just because I want to be home in the morning to see my son, where he doesn't feel like he doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and he doesn't tell me to do it. it's something I put on myself. And again, it's this mom guilt. I'm worried that I'm a bad mom because I work too much. I'm worried that like people are judging me. I'm worried that I have, you know, that I'm going to irreparably harm him. And that is so much about perfectionism. It's so much because I feel like I want to be the perfect mom and do everything so totally right. And I'm afraid of making the slightest mistake because I think it will be fatal.
And then how do you talk to those perfectionist thoughts once you've been able to identify them? What do you tell them instead?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a great story. Like after my book tour, Sean, my husband, and I were coming back and we're at the Delta line. One of us gets upgraded, me. Now I've just come off like 15, 16 hour days. But I, of course, look at my husband and I'm like, baby, you take the front of the bus. I'll sit in the back with Sean. I'm in a 5-hour flight, right? I'm on my 9th episode of Paw Patrol, right? I'm like getting M&Ms thrown at me. I am just sitting there seething, right? All I wanted to do was have a glass of wine and go to sleep. But I am in the back of the bus with my son. And I'm like, why did you do this? And I'm like, oh, because I need to be a martyr. Yep, this is mom guilt. And even though there was an hour left in the flight, I marched up to the front and I looked at my husband and I'm like, switch. And I was just proud of myself, even though it was 4 hours too late, that I caught myself doing it and I reversed course.
You are really changing the conversation about perfectionism, but you're also living this out. So what's an example of something you're working on yourself recently in terms of finding a place where you want to be more brave?
I mean, I have to check myself. I mean, I recently, after I came off this book tour, you know, the book was like an international bestseller, you know, number 4 on the list. And you know what I kept thinking of? I kept going home at night being like, why didn't I sell as many books as Michelle Obama? It was crazy. And I was like, what's wrong with me? Like, my husband would have had a party for every bestseller list he hit, but it's never enough. It's never enough for us. And it's really the thing that I'm really working on because I think that that is such a huge problem that we all have, right? Like if we can't find joy in our successes, like then what do we have, right? Because then we're constantly striving for what? Like for what? And so and that is again the perfectionist mindset that I'm constantly battling of this thing of like it's never enough. I'm never enough. Mm-hmm. And it literally, I think, has real physical consequences. And so that's something I'm constantly working on, is being enough.
Reshma, at Motherly, we talk a lot about how motherhood brings out our superpowers, these like innate powers within us that we only discover after becoming moms. And I'm wondering, what do you see as your sort of motherhood superpowers?
Oh, wow. That's amazing. I feel like it made me so much more. Motherhood made me love myself more and it allowed me to kind of go deeper in who I am and what my insecurities were and what my flaws were and be okay to kind of go to those places and try to work on them. It made me love more, right? Like, I feel like my son has just taught me how to love. Motherhood is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Motherly Podcast.
So awesome talking to you. Thank you so much.
Before we go, we have an essay from Haley Campbell about the qualities she hopes to instill in her own daughter.
I was 20 weeks pregnant when I found out I was having a girl. It came as a shock. I had been sure that the baby was a boy. It wasn't until later, after my daughter Sawyer was born, that I really started to think about what it meant to raise a girl. What did I wish for her? What was I afraid of? What were the challenges she would face simply because she was a girl? And the biggest question of all, what was my part in it?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Last week, I was up at an ungodly hour, tossing and turning in bed. You know that feeling? When you're subconsciously working something out, just at the edges of your mind, you can't quite get a hold of it. It was like that, all nervous energy and thumping heart. Eventually, it solidified. Sawyer, my little baby, was a girl, and that she was going to grow into a woman. The ramifications momentarily blindsided me, because what does it mean to be a girl in today's world? Growing up girl means insane pressure to be beautiful, thin, and endlessly cool on social media. It means that she'll be met with inequality in the workplace, face the risk of sexual and physical assault, and have to work harder than men for recognition in academia. It's not all bad. She may also be a mother herself one day, if she chooses. She may be an engineer, or a poet, or a doctor, or a dancer. So much opportunity if only she can gain the confidence to reach out and grab it. If only I, as a mother, ensure she's given the opportunities she deserves, that all girls deserve. What a gift. What a beautiful responsibility I, along with my husband, had been given. Since then, I've made a conscious effort to meditate on how I want to raise this girl, this reflection of her father and myself. In that time, I've realized three things that I want for her. One, I want her to have the spirit of an explorer. Confidence is built one day, one moment at a time. I want my girl to have the self-assurance to explore if she wants to have adventures if the mood takes her, but also to relax. What does that mean day to day? It means taking risks. As a parent, this is hard. It's an instinct to cover our babies in bubble wrap next to a warm heater so they never get hurt or feel the slightest touch of cold. It's hard to let our kids feel uncomfortable, but it's essential. Teaching our kids to feel comfortable being uncomfortable will help them tap into their own sense of adventure. It won't limit them experiences that they might have had if only they'd had the pluck to say, yes. Having the spirit of an explorer will serve her when being a girl means getting creative and making the life you dream of, no matter what obstacles this world may place in her way. Two, have courage and be kind. This one I stole from the live-action Cinderella movie. Being courageous doesn't mean that you're not afraid. Quite the opposite. Having courage means being afraid, but facing your fears anyways. It takes thought and effort and will challenge you. I wish for my daughter to face her fears head-on and conquer them. In practice, this is comforting her after she takes a fall, then encouraging her to try again. This practice builds self-assurance and a willingness to take risks, even in a world where everyone is watching on social media. Of equal or perhaps even greater value is kindness. This world teaches us a me-first attitude. It rewards those who take for themselves, those who lie, and those who draw outside the lines of ethics. Not always, but a lot. I wish for my daughter to make the kind decision, the decision that spares hearts or encourages the downtrodden. I still want her to think of herself. There's no doormat training happening here, but I want it to be in the context of the people and the world around her. Number three, above all, love. Through it all, I want my daughter to remember love. I want her to feel surrounded by it, embraced by it, buoyed up by it. I want to make her feel like she can take on the world. the scary world with its bullies and bashers and beasts. I want it to fade into the background. I want her to see the beauty in it, in the small things, in the big things, and in the quiet things no one else notices. I want the love she feels to move her to love also. Not just those immediate to her, not just us, her family and friends. I want her overflowing cup of love to give her the energy to love others, to love the planet, to love art and literature and science. I want it to be familiar, like the beating of her own heart. That want is so strong in me as a mother, it drives every decision that I make. Many of these things would be equally important, of course, if I had a boy, instead of the sweet girl that sits in front of me. But somehow, these small pieces of how I want her to see the world loom big and important in my heart these days for this baby who is growing up girl.
Haley Campbell is owner and developer of Beluga Baby and lives in British Columbia with her husband and daughter. You can read Haley's full essay, "To My Daughter, I Wish You Confidence, Courage, and Kindness," on Motherly's website. That's mother.ly. So on the topic of being brave, I wanted to see what my children thought it meant to be brave and courageous.
So what does it mean to be brave, Grant?
It means to not get scared.
Yeah, and what happens after you don't get scared when you're brave?
Then you're not afraid of anything.
Do you think Mom is brave?
Oh, she's brave if her stomach explodes with organic acid and she wouldn't be scared.
If my stomach exploded, I wouldn't be scared.
Explosion.
Okay, yeah.
Like, it just popped. And then you pull all out, and then it would kick you all over because it thought it was still in your stomach.
You think I'm brave because the baby's gonna explode out? Mm-hmm. Me too.
That's it for our show this week. And if you liked what you heard today, please share our show with your friends. And please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We really, really love them. And I actually sit and read every single one. So thanks to everyone who's left a comment. Here's a recent review we got from Brand Margot. So relatable. Love this so much. Thank you so much, Motherly, for this podcast. It's all so relatable. It makes me feel validated, stronger, and more confident as a mother and individual. I am so glad this generation is changing the way we discuss and view motherhood. Thank you so much. That means so much to hear directly from you. And I'd love to read more reviews, honest reviews, of course, on Apple Podcasts. The Motherly Podcast is produced by Michaela Heck and Samantha Gatzik, with additional help from Maggie Borum and Karel Rojas. Our music is by The Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thanks so much for listening.